You're listening to The Point. Sally Cabot-Gunning has been interested in history from an early age. She lives in Brewster, and in addition to being active in researching and presenting that town's history to the public, she's written several works of historical fiction, including the Setucket novels. Her latest book is titled Monticello, A Daughter and Her Father. And Sally Cabot-Gunning joined us in our Woods Hole studio. Welcome back.
Thanks, Mindy. It's always great to be here.
Always great to see you, too. Now, your historical novels always have a great deal of fact in them, so research is really important. And in that research, you find all these ideas for your books. You are researching one book, and you come across some, you know, little tidbit of information that grabs your interest, and you file that away. And it was in your research of Benjamin Franklin's book that you became intrigued with Martha Jefferson Randolph. So tell us about that.
I followed Franklin over to France when Benjamin Franklin's Bastard ended. Franklin was about ready to leave for France as an American diplomat, and that was 1776. And my book was done, but I'm so obsessive, I decided there might be something the older Franklin might inform me in regard to the younger Franklin. So I kept reading, and Franklin arrives in France, and we have Jefferson and his then 12-year-old daughter, Martha. And I knew quite a bit about Jefferson, needless to say, but Martha was new to me. So I started reading about Martha, and I was quickly hooked.
Yeah. And you include some of Martha's actual writing in your story.
I think the first thing that hooked me was when she was 14, she wrote her father a letter from the convent school in Paris where he'd enrolled her. And she said, it grieves my heart that the Negroes aren't free. I wish with all my heart that they could be. And that struck me.
Yeah. Yeah. How much of her writing in the story is her actual words? I mean, with the letters and things that you use in the book?
Quite a bit. Anything to do with slavery, her relationship with her father, all of that was taken as much as I could from fact. The place where we didn't have anything to go on was the area, the large area, that included her feelings about Sally Hemings. Mm-hmm. It is believed that the family expunged any mention of Sally from any letters or anything else.
I'm going to get to Sally in a minute because she's definitely part of this story. But Martha loses her mother, and Thomas, his wife, at an early age. Martha was only 33, the wife Martha was only 33 when she dies, and Thomas is devastated. For Martha, this is also an important moment in her life, not only because of her loss, but the instructions in your story, and I don't know if this is a true part or not, the instructions from a slave named Ursula to be there now for her father. Talk about that.
It was true that on Martha's mother's deathbed, she made Jefferson promise never to remarry. She'd had a stepmother, and they had not had a good relationship, and she did not want to do that to her children. So she made a very, I think, selfish request of her husband that he never marry again. And the slaves present in the room heard it, and they believed that he would follow through with that, and he did. He never married.
Hmm. So it's a close relationship that Martha has with her father throughout her life, but it's also complicated. I guess as true as any father-daughter relationship, right? She struggles to understand him.
Yes. The secret about Jefferson is that he's a secret. He really did not let people in, and even including his children. He was very close to them emotionally, but I'm not sure that he ever revealed his inner secrets to anyone. And I certainly don't believe he did it with his daughter. The letters back and forth to each other, it seems like she's doing the same thing I'm doing, which is trying to figure him out. Mm. So we went along together.
Yeah. And I like the way you express it in the book where, you know, she's examining his facial expressions and, you know, what he's saying and trying to figure out what he's really thinking.
He's such an enigma because he was very popular. Everyone loved him. And yet very few people really understood what was going on in his mind or even perhaps what his facial expression really, really meant.
All right. Let's go back to Sally Hemings now.
Okay.
All right. What evidence do we have that Sally Hemings was Martha's sister? Half-sister.
Yes. Well, let's back up and start with 1873. First of all, there's a very strong oral history coming down about this fact. In 1873, a newspaperman interviewed Madison Hemmings, one of her children, and he told the story right out. He said exactly what happened. He said Sally was Jefferson's concubine in Paris. She was pregnant when they left to come back to this country. She had a child that didn't live very long. And then subsequently she had these other children. So nobody really gave that the amount of attention it deserved because they didn't want to. They didn't want to research it and follow through. So for a very long time, it was just simply denied. The evidence that did come out was every time Sally gave birth to a child, it was logged that Jefferson was present at Monticello 9 months before. And he wasn't there all the time. For a whole period of 3 years, he was hardly there. So it wasn't just a coincidence. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, later on, we get into the fact that the DNA studies were done. There is one strain of thought that thinks that maybe it's his brother, but nobody mentioned the brother ever until the DNA evidence came out, and we now know it has to be a male Jefferson. There were some cousins that got blamed for a while. They proved not to be a match. So and the fact that the children look just like him, it's mm-hmm. commented on many times in the literature. So yeah. Seems overwhelming.
And in your story, first let's start. Martha, as you mentioned, struggles with the issue of slavery throughout her life. But her relationship with Sally, as you said, we don't really know a lot about. But in your story, it takes her a little while to kind of really come to this thought that her father and Sally could have this relationship.
I used a counter voice. Martha did fall in love with her father's secretary when she was in Paris, and I used him as the counter voice because he very much believed they had a meaningful relationship to the degree that they could have. And so he was the counter voice, and he and Martha would argue. She did not want to believe it. She felt it would tarnish her father in the eyes of others, and she couldn't stand that. Mm-hmm. She just could not stand that. But Sally herself, I think there was a certain amount of jealousy there. Sally had a child and named him James Madison. Martha had a child and named him James Madison. I think she was trying to say, that other one doesn't exist.
Mm. You know? So Martha marries Thomas Randolph, who shares her views of freeing slaves. Yet that does not come to pass. And you write in the author's notes that it is historical fact that the Jeffersons and Randolphs both sold and relocated human beings throughout their lives. I make no excuses for these families. I explored their struggles in an effort to better understand how intelligent, conscientious-ridden people could accommodate such an institution for so long. Talk about your struggles with that in writing this story.
It was very difficult. I kept thinking there has to be a deeper answer. I think it really was, it came down to a rather simple thing. I think it came down to a choice between the family and Monticello and the slaves. And the reason the book is called Monticello is because I started to identify what a driving force the physical place was for every generation of that family. And the fact that they lost it all in the end anyway is the bitter, bitter pill.
Yeah.
They could have freed the slaves and everything would have been the same.
And Martha kind of reflects on that.
I gave her that that sentence. Yes,
Sally's brother James and your story, Sally and James go to Paris with the Jeffersons, and James is another interesting character in this book.
He's very interesting. Both Sally and James could have stayed free in France. They both elect to come back with Jefferson. I've heard him described as very persuasive. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably very true. James could have been very easily employed. He'd been trained as a French chef. I think he wouldn't have had too much trouble. Sally was a talented seamstress. I think they both could have found employment. But they decided to come back, and Jefferson made the bargains with them. With James, he promised he would free him once he had trained someone else in the art of French cookery, as mm-hmm. he called it. So James came back. James was in a difficult spot. He was freed. But to be free, he would have to walk away from all his family at Monticello. And what a decision to make. And he didn't handle it very well.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about writing from, you've got this perspective of Sally and James and the other slaves. And, of course, you're a white woman. So how do you put yourself in those shoes and really try to understand this from their perspective and the time?
The book is written from Martha's point of view, so I try to understand their perspective colored and watered through Martha. So that's easier.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because she's got her own issues. I thought it was very telling that when she was 14, she could make that statement about freeing the slaves. And much later in life, in the 1830s, the Randolph branch of the family did have to have an auction and sell some slaves. And she was very upset. She said, "I've lived with the discomfort of slavery all my life. Only now do I feel the bitter pain." And that's only when it struck her, because they had worked very hard not to separate families. If they did sell a slave, it was usually to unite a family. All of a sudden, she realized, we can't control this anymore.
Yeah. And you mentioned that to have that insight at 14, and some of that would be from her father's point of view and her father wanting to free slaves. Yet he said one thing, yet did another. And that kind of worked into their relationship where it was complicated. She's saying, okay, he's saying this, but that's not what he's doing.
Exactly. Way back as far as 1769, he was filing legislation in the House of Burgesses for the end of the slave trade, which had to be the first thing to happen. You don't bring more in. You stop that first. And then the emancipation and enfranchisement of slaves. So that's huge. That is so huge. Way back then, and in 1774, he tried another bill. Both were laughed out of Congress, or the Virginia legislature, I should say. And he really just didn't see a way for it to work in the climate in which he lived. But also, he got back to America and had a little bit of an idea of what he was up against financially. Mm-hmm. Within 5 years of getting back here, he'd mortgaged all his slaves.
Yeah. So later in the book, he gives up, but kind of realizes this is a younger man's fight now. I can't do this fight any longer.
He actually writes those words to a friend who is pushing him, saying, "You're the voice, you're the man. Come on, speak up, get out there, help me with this." And he abdicated.
Yeah.
He really did. He said, "I can't. It's somebody else's. It's not this generation's moment in the sun."
Yeah. And then when you look at Thomas Jefferson's relationship with Sally Hemings and the time, and you wonder, you know, what that relationship was or even could have been. I know Martha struggles with that because, you know, all of a sudden Sally doesn't have to do any of these chores. And at one time, there's one point in the book where she asks Sally to ring for someone. And then Thomas says, "Yes, ring, you know, like, don't go do it. Just ring for someone." And this is where Martha starts to understand that there's more going on here than what meets the eye.
Yes, and Madison Hemings said that. He said that Sally was promised all her children would be free in France. Thomas Jefferson promised her that, and he promised her extraordinary privileges, quote unquote. And he said she never did any work. She did some light sewing. Every single person on the plantation would go out and participate in the harvest, some form of participation in the harvest, not Sally. Mm. So it was definitely a special situation.
Talk about Martha's relationship with her husband. How much of that is based in fact and writings?
Most of it. Mm-hmm. Most of it. You'd look at this and say he probably was suffering from a severe depression. I think seasonal affective disorder, because they kept saying how he was so much worse in the winter. But then they didn't have that. They kept thinking these spa treatments would help him. But it's well documented that he had a violent temper. He had a very melancholy spirit. He was not able to pull it together in order to get a crop to market. He could not. He literally swore that he would never have slaves. And he couldn't do it. He just mm-hmm. could not do it. The way life came down on him, he was inheriting slaves faster than he could even contemplate getting rid of slaves, and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
I think it was a huge disappointment.
And then Martha's relationship with her sister, Maria.
Very close. Very close. I think there was a little jealousy there also, because Martha and her father were very similar in interests and intellectual capacity. Maria, the younger sister, not quite so much. And her father writes numerous letters saying, I love you both just as much. So I think there must have been some pressure from the younger daughter to be reassured in that regard. But Martha was devastated when her sister died, to the point of she became physically ill.
Yeah. And you look at even like Maria's pregnancy versus Martha. I mean, Martha's like worried that she's going to have a difficult time like her mother did. And it was really Maria who had the tough time. So again, there's like, you're like the mother and Martha's like the father.
I was so glad that Martha had a good time of it because she had 12 kids.
No, it's like 12 children.
And if she's going to give birth 12 times, I didn't want her to be suffering like her sister.
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah. And talking about her relationship with her kids.
Well, she says somewhere along the way that she doesn't find motherhood that much of a satisfaction. She was never trained in the domestic arts. Her father really concentrated on the intellectual with her. And she'd lost her mother when she was so young that there was no mother there to step in and fill that gap. The minute they got to Paris, her education took another turn completely. And so she wasn't really prepared for it. But I think she also was just the temperament to do a different thing with her life. Yeah. And she didn't have the opportunity.
Well, really, absolutely an intriguing woman, no doubt. Now, what little tidbit have you come across in this research that you're going to explore more next? Have you come across any?
I think I'm taking a leap out of this particular space of time finally, but I haven't decided completely, so I don't want to commit.
Well,
yes.
Yeah. That's one of the things I love about your books is that there is so much fact in there that it's, you know, I actually had to go look a couple of things up going, did that really happen? You know, myself. Yeah. It's great.
It's obsessive. I have to make it as real as I can.
Yeah. Yeah. Sally Kebbett-Gunning will be giving a talk tonight, 7 p.m. at the Brewster Library, and at 1 p.m. on Sunday, September 17th, as part of the Provincetown Book Festival. We'll have details about her talks and her book, Monticello, at our website, capeandislands.org. Sally, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for
having
me.
Always good to see you.
Great time.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.